This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you dream dreams in the middle of the night? Do you wake yourself to find that you're all alone? Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you see things with your eyes closed tight? Do you wish you could understand the things you're shown?
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's your old friend Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you live from Trinidad World Recording, my recording studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Call me, 817-733-5256. That's my own phone number. The cell phone in my pocket will ring. Let me know where the full band can come play for you or come record here at Trinidad. Also, email us, phil@philpritchett.com. Let us know what you need to hear discussed on the podcast. You are adrift at sea. We are the podcast, the light on the shore, the lighthouse in the fog, giving you some direction in chaotic musical seas. Well, man, we have a full show here today. We've been talking with our friends last week, Bacon Fat. They are here today as well. They are Richard Marshall and Mike Astley, guitarist and bass player, respectively, for Bacon Fat, Effingham, Illinois. Levi Marshall, Midwest promoter of the Flatland Jam, is also here. And who just comes walking in the studio here but full band bass player, our own J.W. Blue Marshall here, everybody. Thanks for coming in, Blue.
Yo.
Yo. That's how every phone conversation I start with him starts. Yo. Blue, where are you? I'm getting there. I'll be there in a minute. Yeah, I'm loading in your bass rig here, man. This thing's heavy. Yeah, just set it up. I'll be there in a minute. So we get in there, and Blue, man, he flies to all the gigs. He rolls high. Blue rolls high. You know, since Blue joined the band 3 years ago, he was a humble guy from the Midwest, you know, dutifully going about his business. But, man, he's gainfully employed. You know, he's got a lifestyle in Big D these days, you know. Went to SMU. Man, he keeps a high profile there. And he's always just got box seats at the Maverick games. You know, he's doing the between period, you know, free skate at the Stars games or something. You know, he's out there, you know, and he's up there at the Ghost Bar, just inch, 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 inch. Rents the BMW to take downtown. Do you do that?
Man about town.
Man, he's a man about town. Blue is a man about town. Well, we're thrilled to have him here today, man. He's playing a little hooky from work, I think. I don't know. Hope it doesn't get you in trouble. Well, man, on our last episode, we discussed the greatness of The Last Waltz, the great Scorsese band, Dylan Neil Young rock movie. We got another movie in the vault today. I was distressed when I said that to a young guy who came in here and recorded that I talked about one of the amps going to 11. Or I said something about he died. He choked on vomit. And the kid had this blank look on his face. And I said, man, you've never seen This Is Spinal Tap? He's like, huh? What's that? I was like, you've never seen This Is Spinal Tap? So for crying out loud, we're going to talk about the greatness of This Is Spinal Tap in the vault. In our second segment, we're going to talk about what's coming up in Effingham, Illinois. This year's Flatland Jam is Phil Pritchard and the Full Band returns. We talked about the Ragweed Jam last year. This year, we've got Posse, we got Jason Boland, Luke Bryan. We got everything from national acts to Red Dirt to local, man, the Flatland Jam. Then our first segment here, you know, it's kind of tough on a country-based, Texas Red Dirt-based show. But we got at least mention, man, the great Michael Jackson. And, you know, just a gigantic figure in music has passed away. What a shock, man. Of course, you know, it's the kind of thing you're shocked, of course, when it actually happens. Then you kind of, you know, your mind looks back a couple years and how he looked in court and stuff. You're like, well, maybe it's really not that surprising. I was up there in Colorado when I heard, you know, a few days ago. Really shocking, man. And what's really weird for me, of course, I'm in my mid-30s. Man, when I was 1984, man, I was a little kid. And, dude, I had the sequined glove and practiced my moonwalk in front of the mirror, as did every kid in the United States. And around the world. It was just, it really was a phenomenon. He's such a punchline now, you know, and it has been for years. But what about you Effingham guys? Richard Marshall? Michael Jackson? What's your take on the whole thing?
Well, I remember it was the last time you were in town, Ben, for the Rose and Bud deal.
Right.
I asked you the question, like, who do you think is, you know, the bands that just worldwide? And we, like, mentioned the Beatles and U2, and then you said Michael Jackson. I was like,
Is that right?
I never thought of that. You know, because we were just talking about as a whole, like somebody who's just known all
ubiquitous
every corner
fame,
of the world,
man.
You know?
Yeah, right.
And I would have never thought that. Because, I mean, it's not like I disrespect his music. I just don't listen to it.
Yeah,
but,
right,
you know,
right.
I was thinking people in my head, and then you brought to life
who's
that.
Who's the guy who could sell out Sydney, Australia, soccer stadium,
right.
Paris, France, L.A., and Toronto, Canada? Who are the bands who can just go sell 80,000 tickets?
And there's no doubt in my mind he was one of them. And that's,
yeah.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing.
That just globally he could be just a wave.
Yeah.
And really pretty original, too, I think.
Oh, there's no question about it. We talked about on the show the great Outliers book by Malcolm Gladwell, which is a book about success. And the whole thing is that the idea of, like, man, he's a genius or he's a musical prodigy is really kind of garbage. These guys like Mozart or these guys like Duane Allman, the truth is, man, they spent 10,000 hours just practicing nonstop. And in the 80s, when you had all these, you know, kind of hair bands, keyboard bands, and these crappy acts out of England who could hardly play, much less kind of sing or write. It was all about fashion and stuff. Here was Jackson, man, a guy who'd been dancing and singing since he was a baby, fully realized on stage. I mean, just, you know, a guy would just get up there and be and totally freaking mesmerizing. Nobody moved like Michael Jackson. Nobody sang like him. So when you say he's original, man, there was no question. And it's weird today to see the Jonas Brothers or yeah, back at, you know, even when he had Garth Brooks, I'm trying to think guys who sold out Texas Stadium, the big old Cowboys. You know, who that's been recently, you know, Britney Spears. It's a little ponderous, man, because there's whatever you want to say about Jackson back in 84 when he sold it out. Man, he had a skill. He had a talent. There was work and practice exhibited in what he was doing on stage, let alone the famous night in 1984, I believe it was, where he had Van Halen come in to play their final tour with David Lee Roth. Like Friday night, they're playing Reunion Arena, you know, on 1984 tour, and the next night, Jackson at Texas Stadium. I was a little kid, and I went to camp that year. A couple kids came late to camp because they stayed to go to those two shows. And Eddie Van Halen went to the Jackson show. We came out there with his guitar and played the solo to Beat It. You know, he played on the record. And, you know, you make jokes, Eddie Van Halen's hair metal and Jackson's this and that. There's no denying that Eddie Van Halen's guitar playing exhibited the 10,000 hours that it took to attain fame as a guitar player. Jackson's dancing and stuff. And the question becomes, who since then has displayed that kind of talent? Mind-boggling virtuosity on stage, and that's why the stadium is sold out. Who's there been, Mike?
I mean, the only person that I can think of really is, you know, U2. I mean, band-wise, I mean,
yeah,
they. But even then, they were kind of.
But they're not.
That way
they're sort of working man's musicians. I'm taking nothing away from how great they are.
But I still, even with their new record coming out, they could still fill.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Texas Stadium.
Oh,
I can't really think of that many
You know, Prince could do Prince well. He was another one. We're trying to think of, but it's amazingly rare.
Paul McCartney could still.
Oh, sure. I mean, your classic dinosaur acts. I'm talking about a new act that comes out. And, man, this guy's so talented. He's so mesmerizing on stage with his dancing or his singing, his something that's just that the place is sold out. Whereas now you just get, well, he's just kind of famous because he got busted for drugs and he dates this girl, so he sold out the stadium. That's kind of the story.
I think that ceases to exist anymore, really. I mean, you're still going to have those bands that they can promote to get that many people in the stadium, but really the music industry has leveled out to selling mediocrity because it's almost become like an ignorant.
But are those guys even out there? I mean, they've got to be out there.
They don't want them. The music wants to use them, abuse them, and send them on their way. They don't want a lifelong act that they have to pacify and take care of for 10 years. They're going to get an act that'll go in there, like the Jonas Brothers. Where will they be in a year?
Yeah, I mean, they're
going to go, they're going to sell all these.
They're
the
all nice guys, yeah,
girls,
but,
whatever,
but no one can really.
They'll be gone.
Exactly. It's just like,
look at Britney Spears.
There's no talent there. There's
gone.
No.
Yeah.
You know, aside from an ability to be somewhat entertaining or an ability to, you know, get the crowd on their feet or whatever, okay. But there's not the virtuosity, man. It just used to be. The only reason people would even buy tickets to go see someone is if they were really great at something. And you wonder, some of these acts who sell out Texas Stadium, what is it they do that well? Why are we all here?
But you have to look at their crowd. They're who they're playing to.
Well, man, but Jackson,
like Miley Cyrus was like.
I know, but so was Michael Jackson. I'm just saying, it was filled with seventh graders. Watch the Beatles at Shea Stadium. It's all a bunch of fifth graders, dude. It's not a bunch of cynical 40-year-olds up there. Oh, the Beatles, they're really great, you know. It's a bunch of kids wetting their pants and screaming. I mean, let's just face it, that's rock. But they had put in the hours, man, in Hamburg. They had done it. They were talented. Jackson could, when he started moving on the stage, you knew it wasn't something he just kind of made up before he came out. Like, you know,
I think if the Jonas Brothers started moonwalking and breakdancing and stuff, maybe I'd go pay to see him.
Well, yeah, sure.
So.
It would. Well, right. But James Brown.
It's a spectacle.
It's the scene, right?
Everybody's
going to be there.
There's nothing spectacular as far as entertainment-wise in music
that's
really
what I'm
anymore.
Saying. That's precisely my point.
It doesn't exist. I mean,
I'm kind of making the argument here that Jackson was maybe, man, like the Beatles, like Elvis Presley, maybe the last of just the he was from Motown, an era when you had to be great to succeed. And man, the New Kids on the Block and the Jonas Brothers and all these guys who've come along later, hey, we sold that stadium out too.
Well, yeah,
what's the difference? You're kind of like, dude, you came on in an era that if you got picked up by Pepsi or you were in with Disney or you know they kind of force feed you the masses.
I think it came easier for that success to amass because it's kind of like the whole obsession with the Kennedys that some people have, you know. They've watched them grow up. It's like, you saw Michael Jackson on stage, he's like 6, 7 years old.
Yeah, that's
right,
that's
right.
You get
to see him as a man, and he's just gets better and better. It wasn't like, you know, he's been in your TV, he's been programmed into your mind since he was a kid. It's like, it's almost like you feel like you know the person. And, I mean, he definitely was very high profile as far as his personal life.
Man, I just remember that year he won all the Grammys, you know, for Thriller. I mean, just the peak. And really, the sad thing about Jackson is he had Off the Wall, his first, I guess it was his first solo album, kind of his first comeback kind of thing after the Jackson 5. It was very much under the radar, but a great listenable pop record, a real Off the Wall, really, really great. He comes back and makes Thriller. Of course, it was just a worldwide phenomenon. You know, Bad was pretty good. But man, Thriller was right. He just, not much happened after that. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, there's some high profile tours and concerts, the occasional hit single. Always a huge celebrity. But man, I remember watching the Grammys that year. He won all those ridiculous Grammys. He won like 12. He had them all spread out over the floor. He'd showed up with a chimpanzee or something. Or maybe that was a little later. I don't know. But every time he went up to the podium, man, you were on the edge of your seat. Because as he started winning them, he'd go up for the next award. And he'd get on stage and he'd do a little shuffle and a little hip thrust and everybody'd scream. It was just like Elvis, man. I mean, you know, shaking his hips or something. Man, you wanted to see him. And man, finally, like for the last one, he does a little spin. He does a little moonwalk to the side and picks up his award and says, thanks a lot. And man, it was you were just riveted. You were waiting for him to do something great, and he just possessed all that. And there he was. And it's I'm trying to think of just someone who even would come close to being that.
I'm gonna give you one.
Who do you got, Blue? Marshall, everybody. He's speaking into the mic.
First of all, I want to get Phil's thoughts on Justin Timberlake. I'm not putting him in that class, but I know Phil likes Justin Timberlake on Saturday Night Live.
Well, that's an interesting. You can definitely see talent in Timberlake. There's no doubt. Don't you think? He can dance.
Also going to throw out Madonna.
A talentless hack, I would say.
But sells Mike? Out worldwide. Agreed.
Oh, I know, but I would put her in a category with, I'm not saying she's just, you know, Garth Brooks.
There's
like,
only
he's
words.
Pretty good. You're kind of like, okay, you know, he's
We can't, you know, we can't describe how we really feel about Madonna on the podcast.
Well, it's more shock value than anything else.
It really
you know,
is.
I mean, a woman on stage, you know, taking off her clothes and stuff, that's going to draw a crowd. Am I right or am I wrong? And there's a certain level of like, well, hey, she's breaking down barriers and stuff. I don't know. I guess you could say that. Timberlake's an interesting question because he can dance. He can sing.
We all say the same thing about
Usher. But he dances
Usher.
And sings like Michael or Usher. Yeah, Usher. He's another one. Yeah, I just don't know, though, if they capture the imagination. I can't describe, you know, in Michael Jackson era, you know, 1984-85, it was just a special time. He was the one guy everybody was watching.
Well, my thing is, I think when Jackson was doing it, it was Michael Jackson. The thing that I kind of wonder about Usher or Timberlake or these new solo pop artists, is it really them? Is it, you know, really reading, you know, are they doing, I mean, who's telling them what to do? I think Jackson, it was him.
Yeah, he wrote those songs.
He wrote
He wrote the We Are the World song. You felt like his performance and stuff, man, he's really giving himself. You feel like that was, man, this is what he thinks, this is how he's giving of himself.
Yeah.
And the crowd responded to that, you know. He was a man. I mean, it's all the punchlines later, all the millions of jokes, and well deserved, and you know, really, since Bad was kind of where things, you know, it just became a sorry parade of court cases and plastic surgery. And, you know, it's just a sad decline, really.
I think the thing that he had was, I mean, he was a 6-7-year-old kid,
right,
who got thrown into a 24-year-old role.
Sure.
At that age, I think he really just never progressed. I mean, I think what he was turning to was he was a kid. He wanted, yeah. I mean, the whole, all that stuff that happened.
He never had a childhood.
I mean, he never had a childhood. I think there was actually, you know, that's a lot of pressure
age. It is.
I mean, I don't know. You know, you've seen that Michael, Jackson 5, Michael Jackson.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's like, if that holds any credibility at all, which I'm sure it's pretty close, that, I mean, that just right there proves that. Yeah. He was thrown from the cradle by his old man, and
sure.
They were, you know, living in, you know,
he
the crappy part of Gary, Indiana, and all of a sudden, like, overnight success.
I think we talk about, you know, the Lefsetz letter, Bob Lefsetz, we read a lot on the show. He wrote about Jackson very eloquently because, you know, you could have kicked a lot of dirt on the guy for obvious reasons, but he let it off by saying, poor guy, man, he missed his childhood, now he's going to miss his old age. You know, he was just kind of... He had a middle part, and that's kind of well put, like you guys are saying. I just felt it was very, very sad. It's a very, because at his best, he represented the best of what everybody wanted to think about music and talent and dancing and achieving your dreams and all that kind of thing. And he just, yeah, I guess just, it's hard for us, any of us, to even imagine that kind of level of scrutiny and fame. And you want to be friends with everybody, but deep down, you got to know you can't trust anybody.
Yeah,
and you just retreat, you know. You just draw away, and
he really,
I don't know. Of course, they haven't come out with the autopsy and all that, and I, you know, who knows what causes heart failure per se, but you know, sure, there's going to be some concoction, you know, probably not intentional, but just he was probably taking all kinds of medication, and he could have been drinking, and like Elvis and so many sad things before him, it's not an intentional thing. It's just like, man, he just gave out, you know. He's just been doing this, living like this for so long and coping with all this craziness.
It's unfortunate what he's going to be remembered for. It's unfortunate. But
what did Robertson say in the last waltz?
This will kill you.
It's a goddamn impossible way of life.
Well, Michael Jackson, rest in peace, man. We all remember the greatness. We remember the greatness, my friends. Well, coming up here in our next segment, now I'm going to draw blue into this here because we're going to talk about what's to come at the Flatland Jam 2009, September 25th through 7th. Is that right? Effingham, Illinois. Oh, man, all Pritchett fans out there in St. Louis, Kansas City, Effingham, Illinois, Chicago, you know who you are. Start thinking about that road trip, that weekend trip, that trek to Effingham to see a great show. We're going to talk about this year's upcoming Effingham Jam, the Flatland Jam, in our next segment when we get back.
Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you hear music play until the light? Do you wish you could remember the song when you wake? Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you cover up when the sun gets bright? Is there anything left from the darkness you can take?
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here at Trinidad World Recording. Call us, 817-733-5256, or email us, phil@philpritchett.com. Let us know what we need to be discussing on the podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody out there, listening at philpritchett.com, or all of you listening at radiofreetexas.org. We love you. What can we say? We are joined here by the contingency from Effingham, Illinois, our home base in the Midwest. Bacon Fat, Richard Marshall, Mike Astley. Midwest promoter Levi Marshall, and the full band's own, the great J.W. Blue Marshall is here. Oh, man. Still, my head is down. My eyes are a little glazed over from Michael Jackson talk. It's a part of my childhood, really. Growing up, Jackson being out there, man, some excitement. We're going to segue onto that here. Soldier on, what else can you do? Talking about, well, in our last podcast, we discussed the greatness of the 2008 Flatland Jam, all-night jam with Pritchett, Cross-Canadian Ragweed, Bacon Fat. Oh, man, who else was out there? Matt Poss was out there, and all the wildness that you can check out on YouTube. Just search Phil Pritchett on YouTube. It's one of the screens that comes up there. There's a couple of songs on there. Lots of fun stuff. J-Dub was there, man. Blue. What do you remember about that night, Blue? What was kind of your recollection of it here? We covered on the last segment. How did you get out there on the stage? I can't remember if you were already out there with Stu or were you back with me in Canada and those guys.
Well, it's all a little foggy, Phil. But I do remember at some point Bacon Fat was jamming with Grady Cross.
Yeah, and
Phil was Jeremy with Ragweed on their bus.
Right.
And I was somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between. On a golf cart.
I can neither confirm nor deny where I was, but I was on a golf cart.
I seem to remember, J-Dub was on like a golf cart with a bunch of beer and a bunch of women, just kind of driving around the fairgrounds.
We're over here. Trying to hold my own with Lynch, you know.
I know. Holding it up. We're doing a damn good job of it. And just a great night.
And what I remember was seeing the jam progress and deciding I wanted to be a part of it and not being able to get the bass from my brother, Richard Marshall.
That's right.
It was
Richard holds up his hand, guilty as charged.
No sharing.
Well, that's tough. You had the bass. Then, of course, you had Jeremy Plato from Ragweed, never one to relinquish his instrument, probably.
It's just the battle of the bass players.
You can't have multiple basses. Of course, you can have as many guitars as you want.
Drummers
maybe,
and
maybe
basses.
Maybe keep that in mind. We're talking about next year. We ought to have a couple of
multiple
bass rigs up there. A couple of rigs, you know.
Just kinda get three basses out there. And we're leading into Spinal Tap, but, maybe a song with just three bass players playing. I don't know.
Well, I want to congratulate Blue here, too, man. He stood on the altar sweating his ass off. At the beautiful and great wedding for our beloved drummer of the full band, Stuart Wiley. I rushed in there. I couldn't find the place, man. I was texting Blue, just, man, where is this place? Where is this place? And it finally occurred to me, I remembered, I go, oh, he's in the wedding. He's probably on the stage. Were you texting me from the altar?
I was. Yeah. I was texting you from the altar.
Pritchett's blowing me up here.
Yeah.
Stuart Wiley, do you take this man to be just...
Blue's just, you missed the turn. I'm just like, Azle Avenue, too far, question mark? Coming right back. But I finally got there. I came in there right as they got to the altar. And, oh, it was just a great ceremony. We're so happy for Stu and his new wife, Haley. Oh, we hope they're just going to be so great together. I just hope he doesn't miss any gigs because of this. This is where the trouble starts. No, I'm just kidding. She couldn't be more supportive, and we just hope they have a great life together. How long were we at the wedding after I left? I had to get early. I had to go pick up the kids, man. The kids swimming everywhere.
Well, the wedding was a short reception with the wonderful, the great Kurt South, as we all know.
PG Podcast owned Kurt South. That was the bonus of the whole wedding.
It was.
Now, it was about 104 degrees inside the church. Pretty warm. Was it warm up there on the altar?
It was pretty warm. It was about 100 and just see, like see, Texas see, Stadium.
No,
it was about 130 on the altar.
On the turf. So, man, I just remember Stu came into the reception, took off his jacket. He's drenched, man. And
he sweat through the tie.
Yeah, his tie was wet. I go, Steve, you sweated through. I sweated through my tie, man. Like his vest was soaking wet. Poor guy. I mean, it was warm up there. Plus, when you're getting married, you're a little nervous anyway. Very warm. You know, getting summertime wedding in Texas. What do you expect? But at the reception, everything was cool. Everybody was sitting down with a cold drink. And who's in there but P2 Podcast own Kurt South, a man never to turn down a gig of any sort. He was playing for a slice of wedding cake and an iced tea. Happy as he could be over there, just playing. He opened his set or played early the great Pritchett song, "Meet Me in Las Vegas."
Great song.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike. So I applauded heavily for that. You know, Kurt just breaking in some Phil Pritchett songs.
I think that's going to actually enter into the Bacon Fat repertoire.
Album? Yeah, you going to put that on there?
I think so.
That's one of
We're
going to
tour it pretty hard.
Good.
Album's going to be Meet Me in Las Vegas with Phil Pritchett.
Producer. Man, everybody does that song. Just, yes, but Pritchett was watching us record it. What does that mean? Very ironic. Well, the Flatland Jam's shaping up this year. We've got Bacon Fat, of course. Matt Poss, of course. Phil Pritchett and the Full Band again. They're lucky to have us, but we're going to be there. The great Jason Boland will be there. Red Dirt Zone. Am I right? Now, this year they're going to have two stages. And Luke Bryan, the mega-selling... I don't know. Is he mega-selling? I don't know much about Luke Bryan. Nashville guy.
Yeah. He had 3 number one singles last year.
Good deal, man. So a real act. Someone with some chart success is going to be there. I'm intimidated.
Back Porch Mary.
And Back Porch Mary. That's right. I was trying to get the other one. Back Porch Mary. So big bill. Last year we only had 3 bands. This year we're going to have
six
bands out there. And I think 2 stages. Isn't that right, Levi?
Yep.
2 stages out there.
2 main stages.
2 main stages so that, you know, one act stops, the other one starts. I'd have put something in the contract, though. You can't cut me off, though. Sometimes we play like Ziegenbach 1 year. We finished a song. We're getting ready to play the next... We'll go into our last song, and the other band kicks on. Dun, da, dun, da, dun, da, dun, you know. So I just smashed my guitar and left. But that was how it ended. I think I really did.
I'll cut you off then.
Is there? Yeah, cut me off. We make the show go well. We're looking forward to it. We talked about, Blue wasn't in here, but we talked about the greatness of the Marshall House, the basement filled with vintage gear to jam on. We don't have to take any instruments to these gigs. I was like, what kind of backline do you have? What kind of instruments are you bringing? I'm like, us? I go, we're bringing nothing. We're just going to already have it there. You know, it'll just materialize. Ride from the airport, you know, a couple of Silver Phase amps and, you know, an old Strat and an old, you know, Fender bass and, you know, Ludwig kit. We'll just get out there and kick ass, take it out of the Marshall basement. So we're really looking forward to going back out there. Loving in the Marshall family home, we're talking about. All the old pictures of J-Dub playing sports, Richard, you know, Mother's Day cards from Mom, dated 1986, up there on the mantelpiece.
A lot of snowmen.
A lot of snowmen. Oh, she has like a snowman collection.
She does.
Now, that's the room I always stay in. Is that the guest room?
Yes, the creepy guest room.
The snowman. I love that room.
See, I love the bed in there. The bed's comfortable.
It's good bed.
It's got the high-speed ceiling fan in there. Oh, man, I sleep like a rock in there, man. Now, we let Stu just sleeps, on the futon next door?
The couch, the futon.
Couch.
wherever he passes out after eating 12 frozen pizzas.
The Jack's pizzas.
The Jack's pizzas. The thing about Illinois, man, Bev, the great Bev Marshall always has, when she knows we're coming to town, she buys like, what kind of pizzas are those?
Jack's.
Jack's?
Yeah.
What is that? You buy them like Sam's or something?
You can buy like 10.
Like
you can buy
like
a
tombstone.
Four for $10.
Dude, we sit there and just make.
10 for $10.
We'll make like 30, like between like 2 in the morning and 5 in the morning.
Factory.
The oven doesn't shut off.
The oven just does not. We just keep shoveling in. And Stu one time, what did he say he ate? I think he ate 5 by himself.
At least
just
4.
Just slid out, you know, a 17-inch pizza, folded it in half. And ate it in 2 bites. I mean, like, just inhaled it.
Consumed
well, after
it.
The Flatland pre-party at the Rosebud, we, I think he ate, like, 3. We were playing poker, and we just kept popping them in, and Bev was up until, like, 5 in the morning with us just making pizzas. And
yeah, J-Dub's mom, Bev, she just stays up with us. I'm always like, Bev, why don't you go to sleep? No, I don't know. She's, like, making, you know, pasta or something. Cooking pancakes in the middle of the night. It's just the most bizarre scene I've ever
That's
been
funny
around.
That you mentioned the pancakes, because when we were in high school one time, we were doing one of our little basement concerts for all the people.
Yeah.
There's probably like 25, 30 people in the basement. And I walk upstairs to go to the bathroom, and Bev's sitting there on the griddle making pancakes for these girls sitting in the kitchen. I'm like, what? She didn't even know
who are
them.
These
she
people?
Just, she's got the pancake mix out and... Bacon and pancakes for all
dude,
these strangers.
It is the most active house in the Midwest. It is any hour of the night or day, there's just people there that you kind of don't know. Animals of every description, you know, dogs everywhere, people. There's people playing music downstairs. There's people watching TV upstairs. There's several, like, 72-inch big-screen TVs in that house.
Strategically placed throughout
strategically
the house.
Strategically placed throughout
by
the home.
By one J.C.
Blocking
Marshall.
Doorways, blocking windows.
Any room in the house where you're standing, you can see a TV, no matter where they're placed.
Oh,
you can
man.
See a TV from any direction.
It is. It is.
It'll be a great bar someday.
That's right, man.
Additional flat screens down the basement just waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
Haven't even been out of the box yet.
I want to rent one, man. I want to get one. Maybe I'll trade in that SG y'all brought me for a big screen. Say, bring me back the TV.
Legend has spread, actually, to Ragweed. They were open invite to Cross Canadian Ragweed for future Effingham travels to stay at the house.
Dude, that'd be great.
It's going to be a musician's haven.
They might take you up on that.
They will.
I thought they were going to come back there with us after the Flatland last year. They had to go to Chicago, but he goes, man, we would, man. We got to go. So they headed out, man. They headed out to Chicago. Well, man, I just cannot wait to the Flatland Jam 2009 edition. I hope, you know what? I feel a lot of pressure because last year was so great, so unplanned. I mean, this year we're going to try to orchestrate it. It's hard to imagine it going off as well as it did last year. You know?
It will.
Who knows,
will.
Man? This look. Yes. You think so?
I think last year, I think there's a lot of people like, yeah, I heard about that. I missed it.
Yeah.
So.
This Luke Bryan guy concerns me, though, man. You know, is he going to... You know, does he know
Rise
his, does
occasion?
He know his band and Bob Dylan? You're going to get up there and wow us, or
we're going to test his metal.
Who knows, man? He might just take off. I don't know. I'm sure Bolin. I know Roger Ray and those guys will jam with us for sure. Yeah. All the Red Dirt guys, no question about
no
it.
No question.
Well, it's going to be a great time, man. The
come
Flatland
from Texas.
Jam. What's that?
Make a road trip from Texas.
Road trip from Oh man, you should. It's not
10 hours.
10 hours maybe.
Free camping.
Free camping. You get up there. How can you get tickets? Is there a Flatland Jam website?
Yeah.
What's it called?
www.flatlandjam.com.
Flatlandjam.com. You can buy tickets. Of course, it all benefits what this year? Last year was the troops, wounded soldiers.
Yeah, last year was the troops. This year it's going to cancer research.
Cancer research. What else?
Get a rodeo, a truck pull.
And a rodeo, tractor pull, all that kind of stuff.
3-day deal. Get on the website. Everything's laid out.
Good deal, man. Well, man, it's a great show. It is a gathering of the... Of the tribe up there, man. It's just great. You know everybody at the show. You tell a joke about Niemurgs from the stage, everybody knows what you're talking about. It's a great feeling, man.
Don't
small town.
Sleeping much.
It's a small town, but it's got a wide appeal, man. People come from all the big cities around, and really, really fun, man. We're looking forward to being back there. So go to flatlandjam.com. Buy your tickets now. You can camp. You can stay there for 2 or 3 days if you want. Tractor pull, all kinds of fun stuff.
$35.
That's for the whole weekend? $35 for the whole weekend. Dude, that's a good deal, man. And, dude, if you need some pizza late night, we're going to head back
contact
to
the band.
Bev's Kitchen.
Email bevskitchen.com. We'll get you in. We'll have a little basement jam, you know, down there. And, it's just going to be fantastic.
321 Austin.
321 F&M, Austin. Illinois. Hey, you can throw on your own.
People will be showing up now.
it's not Mike's house.
That's right. Gypsies invited.
That's right. Come one, come all. Well, thank y'all so much for being in here, guys, talking about the jam. But we got one more section to go here, talking about movie. I mentioned I was distressed with a couple of the young guys coming in here. The young guys do seem to know The Last Waltz. They appreciate Dylan, the band, Neil Young. Yes, I've seen the movie. Van Morrison does the leg kicks. Love it, love it, love it. However, whenever I looked at him and said, I believe virtually everything I read. And I think that's what makes me more of a selective human than someone who doesn't believe anything. They don't know what I'm talking about. We're talking about This is Spinal Tap, coming up next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Email us, phil@philpritchard.com. Let us know what you'd like to hear discussed on the podcast. Also, call me, 817-733-5256. Come record at Trinidad World Recording or hire the full band to come play your next function. We would love it. Well, we are joined here by the Effingham, Illinois contingency of Bacon Fat, Levi Marshall, the full band's own bass greatness. Blue J-Dub, Blue Marshall is here. Man, recounting great stories of Effingham, eating pizza all hours of the night in the Marshall family home, rocking with Ragweed last year out on the flatbed and all sorts of other fun Midwest hijinks. Well, we discussed the great movie The Last Waltz in our last podcast. Staying on the theme of rock films, we've only done albums to this point. I like these last two episodes doing some rock and roll movies. I first saw This is Spinal Tap when it came out, it was a couple years after it came out. This is 1982. I guess it was 1982, 83, 84 it was filmed. I saw it probably in 85 or 86. Of course, I was into heavy metal, rock and roll. I'd seen some documentaries and things. And as a guy in 7th or 8th grade, I watched it with very little sense of humor. I didn't really get why it was funny. I was like, I didn't know if it was a real band. I just didn't quite get it. And it wasn't until a little after that that I saw it again, maybe in the early 90s, you know. And, man, just, of course, by the early 90s, see, like 89, see, was a pivotal year. This is my theory. The Stones came back with Steel Wheels. The Who came back and did a big tour. You had the Dinosaur Axe hitting the road again, late 80s, and it seemed a little silly. And, of course, Spinal Tap had already come out like 85. And it was way ahead of its time because it was poking fun at the Dinosaur Axe, the guys who can't get off the road. They just live in the 60s. But there wasn't a lot of evidence of that still going on. It was still sort of course now it's just ridiculous, you know.
it was just ahead of its time. It saw the absurdity of these guys trying to hold on to their adolescence and all this kind of stuff. Of course, written and directed by, Rob Reiner directed it, but written by, of course, the trio of Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, and Harry Shearer, the three guys in the band, formerly of Saturday Night Live, The Simpsons, and all other kinds of stuff. Y'all know Christopher Guest's stuff, Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman.
The Mighty Wind.
Mighty Wind. All fine movies. However, all paling in comparison to the greatness of this is Spinal Tap. Another movie that just gets funnier every time you see it. When was the first time you saw Spinal Tap, Mike?
Oh, I was probably 16.
Yeah.
17. It wasn't really that, it wasn't really a big, deal in my age group.
Did you know it was funny? I mean, were you just...
Well, see, every time I'd heard about it,
while,
I'm like,
I
thought it was just a movie about like a heavy metal band. I didn't know anything about it.
Well, I did too. I was like, is these guys real? I didn't get it from the outset.
Yeah. And I'd heard, little funny things about it here and there. So one night I was like, screw it, I'll just rent it and check it out. And like you said, the first time I watched it, I was just kind of like, it was funny, the things they were saying. And I really didn't know, is this supposed to be funny? And then when I realized that this is a comedy, and of course.
The thing about it is, of course, when they have all the armadillos in their trousers and stuff like that, that's funny. That's kind of those are gags. The sight gags, those are always funny. Those get you the first time around. What just gets funnier and funnier and funnier are the interviews, the guys themselves, their egos, their conceit, their British accents, their nostalgia for the good old days in the 60s. Because, of course, with the advent of cable TV and MTV and VH1 and 24-hour behind the musics and stuff of these guys giving interviews, smoking the cigarette with the sunglasses, just that was 1968. We were on a cruise, with Steppenwolf, and just recounting some awful story of some guy dying, falling off a boat or something and then you go back and you see this is Spinal Tap, and they're doing the exact same thing 20 years before these guys actually did these things. And it just, kind of like the last pause, you get more out of it every time you see it. How about you, Richard? When was the first time you saw it? Do you remember seeing it?
I think I was in 7th or 8th grade, and my friend Zach brought it over. And when we were growing up, he lived in the neighborhood, and I'd always hang out at my grandparents' house. And we watched it for the first time in my grandparents' basement.
Yeah.
And kind of like you're saying, when we first watched it, the most we got out was like the gag, the getting stuck in the pod and, pulling the cucumber out of his pants. The stuff that was like visually and, easy to get. But we watched it again last night. And like you said, you just pick up on just the little subtleties of of their intellect on how they talk, and it's just hilarious.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? It's really another thing that really struck me last time I saw it was it does have a great story, where Nigel quits the band in the middle and he's disaffected. And as funny as the movie is, there is sort of I wouldn't quite go as far to call it a sentimental edge to it, but there is a story in there, and you get a sense of the childhood deal. And when he comes back to see him at the end, and when he invites Nigel out, it is a strangely touching moment when he gets back out there and rocks with his...
Give him the wave.
Give him the wave with the guitar. And just them trying to survive and do the blues jam, where the guy's just got the thumbs down. He just goes, okay, we can't do that. Okay, that's okay. It's 15 minutes. So I've got an idea. What? Jazz Odyssey. We are not about to do a freeform jazz blues exploration in front of a festival crowd.
And it's just, which was like 25 people sitting in this amphitheater.
This is Spinal Tap Mark 2. We hope you enjoy our new direction. They're just jazzing. In seventh grade, I didn't think that was funny. But as a guy who's played in a band now and watched a gazillion, rockumentaries of it's just freaking hilarious. My favorite, one of my favorite guys in the whole deal, though, is the early Ian Faith, the manager with the cricket bat. Talking to him. I mean, the stories of...
It comes in handy.
Peter Grant, these old the Zeppelin managers and Albert Grossman, Dylan's guy. The stories of those managers, eccentric, crazy, smoking. He's smoking like the little brown cigarette. He's got the cricket bat. And just the dialogue is just so... so hilarious. I think one thing that really kills Christopher Guest's later movies, we talked about Best in Show, Guffman, Mighty Wind. This Spinal Tap was made before the advent of reality TV. I thought about this later on. It was made before reality TV. You just didn't know quite what to make of it, and the interviews and stuff were so believable. And now, with the reality TV everywhere, you know, how do you? I just find that making fun of a dog show is just. It's already stupid and ridiculous. You're going to spoof it? I mean, we're going to spoof fashion designers. You're just kind of like, enough. Just show me the reality show, the real dog show thing. It'll be plenty funny, I promise. Just show me the reality show of behind the scenes of one of these fashion shows. It'll be hilarious. You can't spoof it. You couldn't do Spinal Tap today because we're all in on the joke, man. We've already seen the... the Bret Michaels show and the,
well, there's enough Motley Crue.
They're all so stupid. But you see those now. You look back at Tap. It was before all that. And so when Tap was there, before any of this stuff came out, made it just hilarious because it was twisting a knife a little bit. And now these people are so willing to go on stage and just pull their pants down and show themselves doing what, making eggs and, you know, going to the ATM or whatever. It's just like, you can't even spoof it. You can't even spoof it, you know. But it is just everything about it is just, I've lived in my own little, rock and roll experience in some way or another, you know, going through the drummers or whatever, you know. It doesn't bode well for Stu.
Come to find out, you really can't, there's no form of dusting vomit. You really can't dust for vomit.
For vomit. They don't know whose vomit it was. Oh, just the old footage of them on the shows, you know, the early 60s. Yeah. Another thing that really astounded me about Spinal Tap was that you buy the album, the movie soundtrack, and you find out those guys wrote all those songs. They played all the instruments. Very funny. And, it gave it a lot of... Because the music, one of my biggest pet peeves in music movies, like La Bamba or The Commitments or... anything like that, where there's a band on stage, when the guy's just totally miming, and it's really off-putting, you know. But like that thing you do, you can tell the guys are really playing the guitars, they're playing the right chords. And for me as a musician, you pick up on it, and you go, hey, this is legit. And Spinal Tap is totally legit because they're playing their instruments and they wrote all these songs. Very, very funny. What's your favorite Spinal Tap song on that first movie? Do you have the record, the soundtrack?
I don't.
No.
I don't even know if I know the names of the songs.
You got Sex Farm.
Sex Farm, yeah.
Plowing through your fields.
Yeah, that's got to be the best. Yeah.
Big Bottoms, of course.
Big Bottom is the hit.
Well, no question.
We are talking about having multiple basses on stage for Flatland Jam. Big Bottom, if you notice, they're all playing bass. See, that's a joke you just don't get until...
I didn't catch that until the 10th time I watched it.
Yeah, just a double neck bass. But the album is quite good. They have, of course, Listen to the Flower People from the Summer of Love.
Oh, yeah.
Listen. Shh. And at one point, you see Derek Smalls, the bass player, mouth the words, just, we love you.
Yeah.
We love you.
My favorite thing is just, I love that. I love his jacket he wears.
Yeah.
Oh, God. His just look. And then the puffy coat.
Which one? With who?
Smalls. The Smalls. Bass player.
Yeah.
He's got the hat.
Yeah.
With, you know, the big old...
And how resonant is it that the girlfriend shows up with David, and she wants to be involved in how the band dresses and stuff. And it's so relatable, you know. She has all the pictures... He goes, do you have any idea what it will cost to dress up the band as animals? Remember, she has all the... He's got the, you know. And, of course, maybe the pivotal deal is Stonehenge.
Yes, that's
maybe
my
favorite. Maybe just the greatest, one of the greatest scenes.
Those are inch marks.
You know, the thing is when the Stonehenge monument comes down on the stage, it's hilarious. The funniest thing, though, is just the dialogue. You got to go back and watch the conversation after... The Stonehenge disaster. Oh. Just St. Hubbins. I mean, dude, he is so pissed. He goes, I don't think the band was flat. I think the problem may have been there was a Stonehenge monument on the stage that was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf.
Then he adds, and that tended to underestimate the hugeness of the object. And then when the dust clears, when Ian Faith quits, you know, he gets up. Oh, just I mean, those lines like that, just, you know.
Maybe we can keep the dwarf clear.
What do you mean?
So he won't trot upon it.
Just, I don't think that's the issue here. I mean, it just gets funnier. Every time you see it, there's something else I pull out. You know, the puppet show being billed above. Yeah. I mean, every scene is so fully... It's just a home run of a joke, man, on rock and roll, bands, the ego of musicians. Every single scene, there's not a wasted moment. And if you get the bonus footage... have y'all seen that one? DVD with cut scenes. It's hard to believe any of these scenes were cut. There's one scene of, you know how Billy Crystal's in Dana Carvey are handing out that. There's a scene in there that's not very funny. You're like, they didn't need that one. But there's a whole scene of them on a morning talk show promoting their show. And like, we'll take some calls now for Spinal Tap. And it's just some guy going, hey, is that Rex still on 735? Just, hey, do you have a question for Spinal Tap? He's like, who? And they're all just sitting there, you know. They give him the traffic report. And there's some gold there to be mined as well. It's like an hour long, the cut footage. So some great stuff there as well. So young bands, check out This Is Spinal Tap, hosted by your filmmaker, Marty DeBurgi. The great Rob Reiner, who narrates it and conducts the interviews. Just great stuff. And the more shows you play, the more VH1 behind the musics you see, and the more places you travel and stuff like that, just the funnier the movie is to go back and watch it. When was the last time you saw it, Rich? Y'all saw it last night?
We busted out last night. Yeah. We had to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to say one of my favorite parts, you know, Phil Pritchett, you know, we've played some big shows.
We've
played Texas Stadium.
Yes.
We've played the House of Blues.
Yes,
we've played
indeed.
Some big concerts and
Absolutely.
Festivals. But when they get lost under the stage, you can't find the way. We've had glimpses of that happen to us. Maybe not on that large of a scale, but be wary out there of the big concert venue.
The big concert venue.
You got to be in the right place at the right time.
That's another scene where every now and then you hear someone say, "Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!" And you're like... It's from Spinal Tap. You're just like, that's when they're under the stage and they think they're getting ready to go on. Hello, Cleveland. You know, these things go to 11. There's just little things that you'll hear monitor engineers and front of house guys, they'll utter under their breath as they're miking up your amp or something, that you'll be in on a whole new, you'll be a member of the club with the Spinal Tap things. Lots of fun there. Check it out. This Is Spinal Tap. Just a classic. There's been a lot of movies. Everything else is just a cheap imitation. There's a lot of bad movies that try to be funny music movies, but none more legitimate than Spinal Tap. And they did tour. Well, they didn't tour as Tap, but they did tour last year, didn't they?
No, this is what they did. They came out on TV, the three guys, and they're like, we're going to do a world tour, reunion tour, except it ended up being one night show, acoustic.
Wow.
Those three playing acoustic, and it was their world reunion tour, which I thought was hilarious.
That is funny. That is funny. And that was it? I thought they were coming to, like, Dallas.
Well, you know, I think they were going to book all these dates, and then they just decided one night, where it was, in a huge venue, acoustic, and that was it. They played all their songs acoustic.
And also pay attention to Nigel Tufnel, Christopher Guest, who chews the gum and smokes. It's really almost an exact impression of Jeff Beck. If you've ever seen Jeff Beck interviewed, from the haircut, the cigarettes, well, my solos are my trademark. You know, it's just about a Jeff Beck.
he's holding the gum in his hand. He's like, what is that?
This.
It's my gum. I might need that later.
Yeah.
Sitting there eating.
59 Les Paul right here. No, the sustain. Listen to it. I don't hear anything. You would, though, if it were playing.
That one. Don't even point.
Don't even point it.
Look at it.
Yeah, Tagron. Never even played it. Don't point it. Don't. You've seen enough of that one. Oh, just pretentious, protective of his guitars and his gear. You know, he push it over the cliff. A little push up. Put up to 11. That's what we do. Go to 11. We'll go to 11 with Spinal Tap. Check it out. Well, thanks for being here. Richard Marshall, Mike Astley, Levi Marshall, and the great J.W. Blue Marshall is here. Thanks for hanging out, guys. We look forward to the Flatland Jam at the end of September, September 25th through 27th in Effingham, Illinois. Get your tickets now, flatlandjam.com. Email me at phil@philpritchett.com or call me 817 733-5256. Let me know where we can come play a show for you, or if you want to come record at the studio. Also, go to iTunes or p2tunes.com. Download all the records. Do you know at philpritchard.com you can order now the P2 drop card for $20. I'll mail you a little card in the mail. $20 you download the entire Pritchett catalog. How many CDs is that, Blue?
It's somewhere in the 10, 11? 11 to 20
CDs. It's like 130 songs or something for $20. All you gotta
do growing.
Is, yeah, just go. You just go to the merchandise page. You just say, drop card. I send it to you. You download at will. You get it all instantly. Check it out. Thanks a lot for being here, guys. We'll see everybody at the Flatland Jam in September. Until next time, my name's Phil Pritchett. Y'all be good to each other out there. Take care.
No one knows who they were or what they were doing. But their legacy remains. Hewn into the living rock. Stonehenge, where the demons dwell, where the banshees live and